Okay. So today's koan is case 51. Today's teisho is on case 51, Blue Cliff Records record, and it's called Seppo, What Is This? Seppo's What Is This? It's a rather long koan. Sometimes the long koans can be cumbersome. This is quite an important koan, actually. There's a lot in here. So please bear with me as we go through it all. I don't know if I'll finish the verse or not. We'll see how we go. For those of you that are new, koans are a means that we use to somehow try and enter into the realm that we see when we've seen an aspect of Buddha nature or an aspect of Mu or an aspect of our true self, whatever label you want to give it. So they're not an easy... they're not easily penetrated, and depending on the clarity that we have or that we've had when we had an experience in Zen, is really the degree to which we can really truly see it. But you know, there are degrees of clarity, and this one certainly challenges, and it may challenge some of you. The degree to which we can really see that. And we need to always ask ourselves, as I always say, we need to ask ourselves, can I really see that? We need to continuously challenge ourselves. To what degree am I clear? To what degree can I appreciate that? Those of you that haven't had an experience of Mu, you can still get the essence intellectually of what this is about, but it may not be as easy. So we'll see how we go. So what I'll do is, because it is so long, I'll read the instruction first, give a talk on the instruction, then the case, and then I'll read the case, give a little talk on the case, and then read the verse and see if we have time enough to go through that as well. So the instruction first. If there is even a bit of right and wrong, the mind is lost in confusion. If you do not descend to gradations, there will be no searching. Just say, is letting go right or is holding fast right? If there is even an infinitesimally narrow road of understanding here, one is still stuck in words. Moreover, if you are caught up in hidden and apparent actions, each of them is hanging onto grasses and clinging to trees. Even if you have reached a point of solitary liberation, you will not escape longing for the faraway gates of home. Have you grasped it yet? If not, just understand this totally revealed public case. To test, I bring this up. Look. So a case is a precedent. So the precedent is what we call the case, which is the koan in itself. It's a precedent of someone trying to get someone to awaken, or someone that has seen that world of that the Buddha has seen. So that's what is a precedent. So we use cases as precedent, similar to in the legal system. There are cases as well, and there are precedents. So just a little bit on the Blue Cliff record. The Blue Cliff record was compiled in Sung Dynasty, even though most of the koans, most of the dialogues that happened in the various koans that are cited in the Blue Cliff records happened during the Tang Dynasty. So here we had Master Engo. Master Engo was the personage that actually assembled all the koans, and he also wrote the introduction, and Seppo wrote the verse. So assembling the koans is like, you know, it's like someone, imagine today someone going around and trying to go around the world and going around the country and looking at all the different Zen teachers out there and seeing what they have said, and writing it down and then making a book about the saying. So that's what Master Engo did. At the time, a lot of these things were inscripted on stone, so that's why we can sort of verify its authenticity. Some of it may not be authentic, we don't know. But nevertheless, there's a richness here that we can nevertheless explore. Whether there are authentic or not authentic, or real or not real, is a secondary matter. So Master Engo assembled them. And then Master Engo wrote an appreciative introduction. An introduction is like a commentary that points to the koan itself. And then Seppo later on wrote the verse, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So when we get straight to the introduction, and he doesn't hold back, Master Ango, you know, he starts off straight away. If there's even a bit of right and wrong, the mind is lost in confusion. I mean, we've heard this many, many times, and you've heard me many, many times, you know, talk about this right, or what is right or wrong, what is blue and yellow, what is, you know, even if there is the slightest bit of discrimination, the mind is lost in confusion. You know, there's a lot of right and wrong going on right now in this world. You know, right and wrong. We get caught up in that. What is right and wrong? Are the Palestinians right, or are the Israelis right? Are both right? Are both wrong? You know, what is right or wrong? We're talking about Zen here, and Zen is always, you know, always looking at it from that perspective of Buddha nature, of that perspective of non-discrimination. So that's the first thing. You know, obviously when we discriminate, there's right and wrong. But when we don't discriminate, is there right and wrong? So actually trying to find out what is right and what is wrong is not easy. We might think we know that. Those of you that have practiced here might think, what is right, what is wrong? It is not easy. When I was sitting with this morning, it came to me too that like different ways of interpreting these things arise all the time. But this time what came to me is right and wrong is nothing but a story. You know, really, it's nothing but a story. You know, that is a very glib. It's very glib in one way from the aspect of right and wrong. You try and tell that someone that feels wrongly done by. It's nothing but a story. But it's very glib in one way, but it is super profound in another way. Right and wrong is nothing but a story that I have. You know, and where does that story come from? Where does that story of right and wrong come from? That is, you know, this is something we investigate as we are moving, as we are practicing our sitting. Where does this right and wrong come from? And of course, you know, some of you may know that, you know, if those of you that have practiced for a long time and know a little bit of Buddhism, you know, what the Buddha discovered, you know, was mainly that there is not self. So right and wrong starts right there when we start developing self. That little baby that is a blank sheet of paper all of a sudden starts developing a sense of right and wrong. And that is progressing right up to the moment that where we are right and here. Our rights and our wrongs, the way we see the world, the way we seem, is nothing other than conditioning that we've had ever since we were a little baby. That is our right and that is our wrong. So some of you might vote yes and some of you might vote no, depending on our right and wrong. So if this is what the instruction is saying, if there is even a bit of right and wrong, even a bit of right and wrong, even a little glimmer of right and wrong, the mind is lost in confusion. What is confusion? I mean, confusion is a very mild term, but nowadays confusion is very mild. Nowadays it's anxiety. The mind is lost in anxiety. We are caught in right and wrong, or many other things. Should be, shouldn't be. What's going to happen? If this, if that, when, where, all these things. We are caught in our story. That's where confusion is, that's where anxiety is, that's where our discontentment is, that's where our unhappiness is. Because when I'm unhappy, that means that there is something there that is happy. And on it goes, and on it goes, and on it goes. And even though we know this, and again, you've heard this many times before, how do we shake that? How do we finally shake all of that? So, then it goes on. Just say, is letting go right? Letting go right? Or is holding fast right? Okay, of course, we say in Zen, you know, you've got to let go, or impermanence, or there's all these different words that we have. It's letting go right, or it's holding fast right. And here we come to the crux, really, of you could even say, you know, we come to the crux of it, the crux of the duality. You know, is letting go right or holding fast right? Okay. When I look at this chair, the chair is nothing but a story that I have. That's a chair. Okay, so it's chair. That's a comfortable chair. That's actually, I prefer that chair. It's a little bit more comfortable than that chair. So this chair is made up of whatever. So if I ask myself, what is chair? You know, again, you heard me say this many times before. You know, so I can, okay, chair is a label. So what really is beyond the label? What is beyond the label chair? Oh, it's made up of components. Well, what is the component? It's plastic. Okay, plastic, and we've got some metal there, and we've got fabric there. So what is, if I keep on asking, what is chair? You know, I keep on asking and asking and asking, what is chair? I will not come to a conclusion what chair is. If I really look at any type of phenomena, what is Arno? Of course, it's the biggest story. So chair, I have a story what chair is, and of course I have a story what Arno is. The biggest story of all is my own self-image story. But let's look at chair. What is chair? You know, what is chair? If I really intellectually ask and I start deducing what is chair, like science does. Science has come now, and again, you've heard me say it many times before, but I like to repeat it anyway. Science has come down now to quarks. Quarks, not the quark at Star Trek, by the way. It's another quark for those that are Trekkie fans. But anyway, quarks, the smallest particle. The smallest particle in the universe is now a quark. So you could say, well, this is quarks. But now they say you can't really tell because within quarks, but science hasn't developed yet something that there are other particles there, way beyond our comprehension. But we're developing new techniques to discover what that is. So what is chair? You know, that's the question. What is chair? So this is what he's asking here. Just say, is letting go right? Letting go of chair, letting go of Arno, is that right? And of course, in Buddhism, we know we let go, impermanence. We continuously let go, let go, let go. The famous phrase that always comes to mind, which I quite treasure, is, you know, if you want to find the truth, drop your opinion. What's my opinion of the chair? If you want to keep on dropping, keep on letting go, keep on letting go, eventually we get somewhere that resembles the truth. Okay. But can I live like that? Can I question? Can I question every day, what is this? What is this? What is this? I'll go mad. You know, I would go absolutely bonkers if I would question, what is chair? What is Pat? What is this? What is that? What is that? But for once, I need to find out what it is. I really need to find out at least once what that is. And once I found that out, you know, then I can let go of that again. You know, I can let go, and I'm quite happy to call it a chair. It's a chair, nothing but a chair, nothing but a computer, nothing but Arno. You know. But until that, there is confusion. So here, just say, is letting go right or holding fast right? So do I hold on to chair? This is chair, or do I let it go? So that's the question here. That's how far do you go with this? You know, if I continuously let go, if I'm lost in that world of impermanence, in that world of nothingness, that world of emptiness, as it's called in Buddhism, if I'm always in that state, well, you know, my wife would divorce me. quite as simple as that. I cannot live in that world all the time. Maybe some people do, maybe some monks in the Himalayas or in a cave somewhere in Thailand or in Burma or in Sri Lanka, they stay in that realm of consciousness where there's nothing at all. But of course, as lay people, we cannot stay there all the time. We need to come back to the world of discrimination, even though there's no such thing. But this is the challenge here. So again, if there's even a bit of right and wrong, so what is right? What is wrong? Is the chair right? Is the chair, is it wrong? Because there is no chair. It's just a label. You know, is it really real? Is it not real? You know, the mind is lost in confusion. If you do not descend to graduations, there will be no searching. Okay. So, okay. If you do not descend to graduation, to gradations, there will be no searching. So what that means is, if you do not descend to gradations, meaning if you do not descend to searching, to the process of it all, you know, there will be no searching. If you do not descend to stages, processes, there will be no searching. Even the fact that we are searching for Buddha nature or truth or whatever it is we are searching for is falling into the realms of gradations. It's falling into the realm of stages. It's falling into the realm of duality. Quite often people get confused. Oh, I need to let go. If I let go, how, you know, if there is no goal, how come I have a goal? And that comes up quite often. If there's no goal, how come I have a goal? So these are the questions that we need to resolve. Just say, is letting go right or is holding fast right? Then it goes on. If there is even an infinitesimally narrow road of understanding, here, one is still stuck in words. So notice in this introduction, he always takes one side, then the other side, one side, then the other side. And of course, that is, for those of you that are not used to this, it's very confusing. So which one is it? Is it this one? Is it that one? So we're constantly going, is it this one? Is there no understanding? Is there no understanding? Which way shall I go? Why can't you say it straight? Just say it straight. It's not easy, because the straight answer, in many ways, the straight answer is confusing. It may be straight and you might get it intellectually, but that's not it. You've got to go beyond the straight answer. That's not easy. You know, if there's even an infinitesimally narrow road of understanding here, one is still stuck in words. You know, in other words, we are still stuck. What are words? Chair is a word. We are still stuck in layers, in a layer of what it really is. We're still stuck there. And of course, our practice is to go beyond that. If you're caught up in hidden and apparent actions, each of them is hanging onto grasses and clinging to trees. So what that means is, if you're caught up in hidden and apparent actions, hidden, the apparent is the chair. The chair is apparent. Everyone can see there's a chair. Now, what's hidden is really, what is this chair? You know, that's hidden. You could even say the elements of the chair are hidden. You can't see the quarks. You can't see them. You might not even be able to see the iron ore that is in the metal. There are many, many things that are hidden that our consciousness cannot see. We see the apparent. Whatever we see, whatever our eyes can see and our ears can hear, that is the level of our consciousness. But the hidden part goes much deeper than that. We can go much further with that. So that's the hidden part. That's what this refers to. If you are caught up in hidden and apparent actions, each of them, so not saying one is right, the other one is wrong, each of them is hanging onto grasses and clinging onto trees. So the grasses are delusions and the trees. So you're clinging on to something. You're clinging on to the emptiness of it all. Or you're clinging on to the reality of whatever that is, the reality of it all. You're clinging on to the grasses and clinging to the trees. You're clinging to the phenomenal, or you're clinging to the essential. You're clinging to the story, or you're clinging to the fiction, or you're clinging to the truth. What many words for these things. Even then it goes on, even if you have reached the point of solitary liberation, this guy is really challenging us. Even if you've reached the point of understanding where you have to the point of seeing yourself as a solitary liberation, you will not escape longing for the faraway gates of home. So what's this? Solitary liberation. Two ways of looking at that. Solitary liberation is like I alone. That's one way of looking at it. So when the Buddha has had his enlightenment experience, he is reputed to have said, I alone am the honored one. So I alone, for those that haven't heard this before, doesn't mean me alone as in my ego alone. I alone is nothing other than, there's nothing other than me. There's nothing other than the universe. So yourself is completely disappeared. And because yourself has completely disappeared, everything is self. There's nothing other. There's no longer any other. There's no longer any duality. You can no longer see other. So that's why we call it self. But, you know, so self in the sense, this word here, self, means there is no other. That is solitary liberation. No more other. Just whatever you want to call it. People call it Buddha or not self or the universe or total existence or the world of oneness. Whatever label, dream time you might call it, whatever label, God you might call it, whatever label you want to attach to it, doesn't matter. But it is a state of mind. It is a state of mind, you know. And the Buddha is reputedly to have said, "I alone," you know, which or alone, you know, is another way of looking at it, which is a lovely phrase. Poor and solitary, you know. Poor, as in there's nothing. Poor and solitary is another way. Poor meaning that you cannot have anything because you are everything. You cannot have anything. Everything is there. You are everything. That is like poor and solitary. It's a beautiful way of expressing the same thing, you know. So that's one way of looking at solitary liberation. Yamada Roshi in his Teisho, he looked at solitary liberation in a different way. He said that some people have solitary liberation. In other words, they get liberated without a teaching, or without a sangha, or without a teacher. Okay. But that is very day. That is, you know, you can delude that. You can easily get into delusion doing that, because how would you know? There's no feedback, you know. So you can easily get into delusion. So that's why the teachings, in a way, you know, become a resource for validation. Is what I'm experiencing real? Am I on the right track? Yeah, well, we can look at the teachings. What do the teachings say? So that is one way. Or you can go to a teacher, and the teacher can confirm it one way or another. That's another way of doing it. So that solitary liberation, without all of this, without this feedback, can be problematic. You know, so this is what this. That's the way Yamada Roshi looks at it. I must say, I like the first one. You know, even if you have reached a point of solitary liberation, otherwise you're totally free, you know, you will not escape longing for faraway gates of home. You know, even then, you still long for freedom. Why? That's a good question. Why you still long for freedom? You know. So this is a Dokusan question. Why do you long for freedom? Still, why? Aren't you totally free? You know. So this is, it's very challenging. You know. Then he says, have you grasped it yet? So in the introduction, he said, have you got it yet? Did you get it? Okay, did you get it? What I'm talking about, are you getting it? If not, just understand this totally revealed public case. So if not, now have a look at the case that I'm just about presenting, that we've just about to read out. And to test it, I bring this up. Look, just have a look. Have a look at this case that's coming up to test it. Okay. That just shows you how hard it is to reach the stage of total liberation. You know, never get comfortable. That stage of total, we might think we got it. That's, you know, never get comfortable in that. Keep. Even that part is you know, after a while, you know, the searching part is nothing other than it itself. You know, you realize that there is that, you know, as long as I live, I'm going to walk, I'm going to lay down, I'm going to cry, I'm going to laugh. There's nothing other than the path. The path itself is it. There is no finishing line. There is no finishing. You know, it just continues. It continues forever and ever. You know. So this is, but it's not easy. Not easy saying it's not easy. It's really hard to sort of get there, and because of that, we keep going. Okay, we'll get to the case. When Seppo was living as a hermit, two monks came to pay their respects. Seppo saw them coming and opening the door to the hermitage. Sorry, and opening the door of the hermitage with his hands, he leaned out and said, "What's this?" So he said, "What's this?" Okay, so here we have Seppo. Seppo was born in 822. I'm not sure when he died. Very, very famous Zen master. He was a student of Tokusan and a Dharma brother of Ganto, so we're going to meet Ganto in a minute. And there's about six or seven koans that relate to Seppo and Ganto as both Dharma brothers in our collection of koans. So Seppo is very well known, and he's very well known for what's this. They call it also this-ness, another funny name. It was Glenn used to love that word, this-ness, you know, or thus-ness. And by the way, Tathagata means thusness, you know, the Tathagata, you know, means just this, you know. So here we have Seppo living in a hermitage. Now, the reason he was living in the hermitage is during that time in China, they were persecutions, you know, under Emperor, what was his name? Busu. Under Emperor Busu, they destroyed over 10,000 monasteries. So all of a sudden, his allegiance was towards, I forget now, either Taoism or Confucianism. So he got rid of all the Buddhist monasteries. That happened periodically in China. So he got rid of them. And according to the records, over 200,000 monastics, men and women, had to disrobe. That's a really major affair, you know. And legend has it, and I can't verify this, that this is where this came from. This is a raksu. So this is a symbol. You know, monastics used to wear a robe, but all of a sudden when the emperor came in and says, okay, no more Buddhism in this country, even though they took their vows, you know, they cut up their robes and made these raksus. And the raksu was hidden under their clothes, their working clothes. Okay. So that is a symbol of from that time, according to what I've read. But it's not verified, so let's not hang on to that as a story. So, okay, so he was then living in a hermitage because he was hiding. He was hiding from, he wasn't publicly, you know, allowed to be in a monastery and teach. Okay. And by all accounts, the hermitage was very small. So two monks came along and paid his respects. They paid their respects to him. Why did they pay their respects to him? Why did they pay their respects to him? And again, it's that searching, you know. I don't think it was just, oh, how you going? It's more like, okay, they were searching for, you know, they were searching for whatever it is we're all searching for, no matter what stage we're in. They were searching, and maybe they could get some trigger from Seppo that would make them realize. What did Seppo do? He didn't say, come in, have a cup of tea. No. He opened the door and he said, what's this? What's this? That's all he said. What's this? Okay. And one of the monks also said, what's this? You could just say, what's this? What's this? It's comical, you know. It's quite, when you read it like that, it's quite comical. But it's actually, when you look at it in the context of Zen, you know, you really got to find out what's this, what is this? What is, what's this? You know, and is the what's this of Seppo different to the what's this that the monk repeated? So of course, the next action gives us a clue. Seppo hung his head and went back into the hermitage. So he closed the door. As soon as the monk said, "What's this?" he hung his head and he closed the door. So what that evokes in that story in us is that he was very sad. To me, anyway, I feel like he was sad. Like, oh, what a waste of time. Or not even a waste of time. What a shame. What a shame. The monks, what a shame that they do not see what's this. What a shame they do not see what's this. They do not see that world. They're still stuck in what's this. They're still stuck in chair. What's this? Chair. What's chair? I don't know. What's chair? What's chair? Yeah. They're still stuck there. They have not gone past. They have not realized past their discrimination. They have not realized past their self. They haven't seen that world yet. You know. And even if they had seen it, they can't articulate it yet. It's not ripe. It's not embodied. They may have had a memory of it. They may have seen a glimpse of it, but it is not totally embodied. They are not totally free. That's really what it comes down to. They're not totally free, you know. And some of you, even those that have passed the Koa and Mu, you know, it's not that easy, you know, to really be free. You know, that's why that there's gradations or graduations or stages, you know. There's one thing is seeing it, another thing is being it, being totally free. That's a completely different thing. That takes time. So here we have this. One of the monks also said, "Was this?" Seppo hung his head and went back into the hermitage. Later, the monk went to Ganto, and Ganto asked, "Where have you come from?" Now, one thing important to remember when we're talking about a koan, you know, in this case, Ganto was a Dharma brother, as it happens, of Seppo. But Ganto was also a famous teacher. So the monk came to another teacher, Ganto, and then Ganto asked him, you know, "Where have you come from?" So these are not casual encounters. Okay, in sometimes there are casual encounters in a koan, but that becomes apparent. But when a Zen teacher asks you, "Where have you come from?" you know, especially in this instance, that's a dokusan question. And need I remind you, dokusan means coming to the teacher alone. I alone, no self. If you can see no self, then you should be able to answer, "Where do you come from?" Can you come from anywhere? Where do you come from? Where do you come from? Is there a place where you come from? Like that chair, where does that chair come from? Iron ore of Australia, Pilbara maybe? Where does that chair come from? Where do you come from is a state of mind that we need to see that very clearly in order to see this koan. You know? So here, this later the monk went to Ganto and asked, you know, and Ganto asked, "Where have you come from?" Ganto is somehow inviting the monk to reveal his understanding of Buddhism, to reveal his clarity. So, you know, and what did, where are we? Number four, number five. And the monk said, "Yes, I have." Oh, sorry, there's one before then. The monk said, "From Rainan." Okay, where do you come from? The monk said, "From Rainan." Then the next question Ganto answers, "Have you been to Seppo's? Have you been to Seppo's?" Again, for those of you, if you come to dokusan, remember, it's not a casual conversation. In a casual conversation, of course, we would say yes or no, and here and there. I mean, casual is the world of discriminating, the world of chair and pattern and computer and all of that. In the dokusan room, it's I alone, no self. Let's express that world, I alone. So here, that question, Have you been to Seppo? Have you been to Seppo? Have you really seen Seppo? Have you seen Chia? that's the question. Have you seen Cher? Have you seen Seppo? And of course, those people that haven't seen Seppo or that haven't really, that really haven't seen Cher, they can't answer that because they haven't seen it. There's no reference point there for it. So this is why Dokusan is so important, because in Dokusan we are continuously challenged to go back and somehow enter that world, that world of the Buddha or that world of oneness or that whatever world you want to call it, the I alone world. You know, we are continuously challenged to enter that, getting into a state of mind of I alone. You know, this is why this is so challenging. Have you been to Seppo? The monk said, yes, I have. Okay, so yes, I have. Have you been to Seppo? Yes, I have. How would you have answered that question? Have you been to Seppo? The monk said, yes, I have. Okay, so yes, I have. So that's okay. So there's an I, okay, and there's a Seppo, is there? Is there an I and there's a Seppo? You know, this is a manner, it's a Dokusan question. There's an I, there's a Seppo, okay? Yes, I have. Gantō said, actually, Gantō was very patient here. What did he have to say? He said, what did... he keeps going. What did Seppo have to say? He says, what did Seppo have to say? So he keeps going. And the monk related the previous story. So he told him that whole story about going to the hermitage, you know, and told him, you know, what did he say? The monk said, he said nothing. What's this? And I said, what's this? And he hung his head lower, and then he closed the door. He hung his head and went back into the hermitage. Okay. So the monk did not understand that. He did not get it. He did not get the teaching. You know. And he still didn't get it because he's recounting it like, I'm confused here. He's recounting it to, you know, he's recounting it to Gantō. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that confusion. It's necessary. Of course, not everyone is awakened. So, you know, not everyone can see that. So it's like, of course, that's why you go to see these people. That's, you know, that's why you go and see the teacher. That's why you go through that whole process of koan work, to continuously challenge your own perception of whether you're stuck in duality or stuck in fiction or stuck in your own story or not. Gantō then, so after the monk related the previous story, Gantō said, what did he say? The monk said, he said nothing. He hung his head and went back into the hermitage. And Gantō said, ah, Gantō said. So now comes the famous phrase of Gantō's. Gantō said, ah, how unfortunate that at that time, in other words, when Gantō and Seppo were still together as Dharma brothers, how unfortunate at that time, I was unable to tell him the last word. The last word. I was unable to tell him the last word. If I had told him, all the people under heaven would not have been a match for old Seppo. So the last word, you may have, those of you that have been here for a while, you may have heard that phrase before when both Seppo and Gantō were students of Tokusan. And Tokusan went with his bowl to the kitchen before the bell has rung. And Seppo, cocky monk that he was at the time, not scolded him, but told him, oh, go back, the bell hasn't rung yet. And then again, Gantō said to him, I didn't tell Tokusan, our teacher, the last word. So that last word came up again. I didn't tell him the last word. So Gantō is famous for this phrase, the last word. And actually, the more I think about it, it's brilliant. It's just a brilliant, what is Zen? Well, the last word, you know, what is the last word? You know, like if I take chair again, what's the last word? Okay, I could always ask, what is it? What is it? Chair, what is it? Stool, what is it? Assembly of parts. What is it? Part of it is fabric. What is it? I can ask why, or what. I can ask that as long as I live, and most people do, and I will never get an answer. And the last word is really what what this Zen is all about. We've got to find the last word. What is the last word? You know, the last word. Quite often when people start on Mu, I say, okay, once you are practicing Mu and you know, you get the Koan Mu as your first Koan to work on until you have a breakthrough, you know, people say, what do I do off the cushion? So that's your practice on the cushion is to Mu. Your practice off the cushion, because it's nothing other but Mu, but what we can start off with is substituting our story that we have in our head with Mu. So I might say, oh, I've got to pick, oh, I don't want that chair, I want another chair that's more comfortable, Mu. And so what happens as we are following that practice is that we are substituting our labels for Mu. Okay, so what does that do? Well, labels entangle us because we believe they're real. We believe the story that they tell. So a chair is uncomfortable. We believe that story because I've experienced that chair is uncomfortable, whatever. We believe the language. We believe the story of our life. So by substituting it with Mu, we are starting to break the story down. Similar to what we do when we are sitting in meditation. We are starting to break that story down. You know, what is this? You know, what is this? I can always come up with something. What's the last word? What is the last word? You know, can you come up with the last word? You know, oh, to come up with the last word. Really, this is what it's about. You know, is Mu the last word? What is the last word? You know, this is Ganto is quite famous for that. Ah, how unfortunate that at that time. So he is giving the monks another opportunity to somehow wake up. To beyond the story that you've created. Ganto, how unfortunate that at that time I was unable to tell him the last word. You know, the last word. If I had told him, all of the people under heaven would not have been a match for old Seppo. The monk came at the end of the summer retreat. So summer retreat, like the rains retreat. So different Buddhist traditions have different retreats, sessions, you would call it, longer sessions. So it lasted for a few months, summer retreat. I told the story again and asked for instruction. So he brought that back. So in other words, he was working on this. He was mulling this over. And he brought it back. And Ganto said, why didn't you come sooner? Why did you wait for so long? Why did you wait a whole summer retreat to come back with that same question? The monk said, I did not dare say anything. This happens quite often. Students are scared because they think that they say the wrong thing. They say the wrong thing, so people don't come, you know. Or they say, I'm not going to go until I know. And this happens quite often when people don't come to Dokusan, you know. It's like there's whatever reasons people have not to come to Dokusan. But remember, and I believe Pat gave a teacher on this during the session, that there's always in the Dokusan, there's pecking and picking. So in other words, the student comes, you know, pecking as in, oh, he wants to know. And then the teacher comes picking as in the egg needs to break. So the analogy here is a chicken inside an egg. That chicken wants to get free of the shell. It's picking from inside and the teacher is picking from the outside. Okay, pecking and picking. This is what happens in Dokusan, pecking and picking. And so, you know, if people are too scared for that process to happen, that happens in the Dokusan room, then unfortunately that pecking and picking doesn't take place. So that's why Dokusan is also very important, because you never know what happens. You never know what insights can arise in Dokusan. That's why it's important not to be scared, you know. No one is going to bite in Dokusan. But of course, in those days, probably it was a bit harsher than nowadays. They didn't have sticks, and they didn't. There was no occupational health and whatever safety standards in Tang Dynasty China. So okay, so it says. So the monk came. At the end of the summer retreat, told the story again and asked for instruction. And Ganto said, why didn't you come sooner? And the monk said, "I did not dare to say anything." Very shy. Gantō said, "Although Seppo and I were born of the same tree." So what that here refers to, we're born of the same tree. You could say they're born of the same lineage, or they're born of the same teacher, because they both had Tokusan as their teacher. You know, that is how it is usually interpreted. But born of the same tree also, we're all born of the same tree. Everything is born of the same tree, you know. Born of the same tree. Of course, that's only a phrase that we can appreciate. He will not die on the same tree as I. He will not die on the same tree as I. So he will not die on the same tree as I. It's again this, you know, the image here is form is empty. Empty is form. Even though everything is born of the same tree, it dies of a separate tree. In other words, everything is individual, even though there's no such thing as individuality. There is, everything is the same and different, everything is different and the same. Yeah. It's like this beautiful, you know, and of course, to us, it seems like a contradiction. To the logical discriminating mind, that is a total contradiction. But actually, eventually, you will be able to see that it's something and it's nothing, and it's nothing and it's something. Like that. This is what he is saying here. Although Seppo and I were born of the same tree, he will not die on the same tree. If you want to know the last word, it is just this. He said, if you want to know the last word, it is just this. Again, a magnificent saying. It is just this. You know. Now, as soon as I say it is just this, it's gone. It's just this. You cannot hold fast. It's just this. No, 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 it's not this. It's this. Oh, no, where's it gone? It's this. It's this. It's this. It's this. It's just this. You know. Is it a chair? No, no, it's just this. What's just this? It's, again, please appreciate, actually, you know, he's using words as, you know, he's trying to use words, even though they are discriminating, to get us to turn around, to see it. It's just this. It's just this. You know, and this is the genius of it. It's to somehow use this is what's called a turning word in Zen. A turning word for us to all of a sudden get it, even though it's just a word, it's just a label. It's just this, you know. And this, you can never capture it. How are you going to capture this? You know, it's just this is total freedom. You cannot, it's always just this, whatever. Oh, I'm going to die, just this. Well, I'm going to live, oh, just this, just this, just this. It's just, there's nothing to hold on to. You cannot grasp it. It's just this, because it's just this. It's just beautiful. You could also, like when you look at other Buddhist terminology, and some people might relate to that better, just this is also a way of saying impermanent. Just impermanent, you know. That's one. Emptiness is another one. Emptiness. You know. So these are different terms. Sometimes we get stuck on certain terms, and then we make something out of those terms. Like, what is emptiness? Well, I know what emptiness is. So therefore, we get stuck there, you know, on that term of emptiness or impermanence or just this. It doesn't really matter, you know. So freeing ourselves from all of this, you know, and this is beautiful. It's just this. Whatever that is, it's just this, you know. It's just this. Okay, I won't have enough time for the verse, but I'll read it out. But I won't have enough time to talk about it. Verse. The last word, I will tell it for you. The season when both bright and dark are of a pair. Born of the same branch, they mutually know each other. Not dying on the same branch, they are completely separate from each other. Completely separate. Yellow head and blue eyes must also distinguish clearly. South, north, east, west. Let us return. The night grows late, and we both see the snow of a thousand crags.